ready when y'all are, I guess.
All right, ready?
Yep.
All right, 3, 2, whatever.
What is good, everybody? It's your boy Francis Carlotta on episode 44 of the Up and Under podcast. After a lengthy absence where Connor decided he wanted to incur more student debt and start business school, Grant got a fancy new job, and I studied for that stupid bar exam again. Andrew Wiggins and the Golden State Warriors won the NBA title. Nikola Jokic went back-to-back in MVPs. Kevin Durant became the biggest tease in NBA history. And after all of that, we are back to talk all things hoops. Connor, how are you, man? How's Duke University? How's school starting? How are you, dude?
I'm good. A lot of questions right there.
I know.
School is good. I have not joined the Duke basketball bandwagon, but I will probably camp out for those to try to get season tickets and probably not root for them, but we'll see how it goes. We'll see if I get sucked into it, but I don't think so. The distaste is still pretty strong in me.
Yeah, fair enough. Grant, how are you, man?
I'm doing good, Francis. That was an excellent summary of everything that's happened in the interim. The only thing you missed is the one big question all of our listeners have been wondering the entire time. Have I dropped my water bottle and spilled it in a public place? And the answer is yes. I've done it like 2 or 3 times. It's actually been a really rough time for me and water. So that's just
how does this keep happening?
The problem is I have it with me at all times. So it's just the odds of it are happening are pretty high. Okay. So like, and if I place it, like one time I placed it on a piece of gym equipment that wasn't very stable, and that fell over, it spilled everywhere. And another time I like bumped into something and it slipped out of my hand or something. Like it just can happen a lot. There's a lot of ways.
But the lid is closed though, right? You're not spilling water, or is it just wide open?
Well, viewers can't see this, but it's a Yeti. And sometimes I make the mistake of like leaving this part open and that will kind of just spill out some. If it just tips over, but sometimes it will fall from a high place and the whole lid will come off and that will spill everywhere. Yeah.
And that will be the more embarrassing.
Yes, because that's loud and everyone sees it, and then everyone sees me like just make a decision in the moment to not clean it up and just kind of walk away because it just
How long do you stand there looking at it?
I mean, well, sometimes I do clean it up, like I don't know, 50% of the time I do clean it up. It just takes so many paper towels to go, so many trips to the paper towel machine to clean it up. So that's even more embarrassing than just like walking away, honestly.
That's so rough that you even have a percentage. So you've done this enough that you have a percentage of how often you stay.
Yeah, it's a constant issue in my life.
Wow. Well, okay. Well, I hope that issue somehow gets fixed. Maybe you should go to therapy about that issue. I don't know. That might be something you should talk to somebody about. But hopefully that gets fixed. Besides your water bottle issues, I'm glad you're doing well, Grant. Glad you're doing well too, Connor.
What do you have going on, Francis? What are you? Diego news?
I'm applying to jobs, just hoping to get another post bar job after taking the bar exam. Just waiting for people to hit me back. I've had a lot of interviews, which is good.
Yeah. The job search has got to be the most soul sucking process there is in our life.
Yeah, it's not a fan.
It's stressful.
At all.
Yeah, it's definitely stressful, but yeah. Other than basically having no money, I'm alive. I'm okay. All right, let's get into the NBA offseason. And today we're going to be talking about the winners and losers of the offseason so far. So let's get into it, Grant. I'm going to start with you, man, and because I'm starting with you because you're such a positive, happy person. So I'm going to have you give a winner of the offseason so far, and then we'll just move forward from there.
Okay. It's funny you say...
That was sarcasm. Was that sarcasm?
I feel like that was. Okay, well, it's...
Okay.
No.
I mean, I do have 3 losers and 2 winners, so like statistically, I am not a positive person.
Oh.
But,
yeah. Okay.
But we'll start with, I think, probably my biggest winner, and I'm guessing this is someone you guys have as well. That's the Celtics, one of my bigger winners of the offseason.
I do have them as a winner.
Yeah. I think of any of the contenders, of the series contenders, probably the biggest improvement on paper, at least. If healthy, Brogdon is a ridiculously good fit, gives them a surplus of lineup flexibility. They already had a bunch of lineup flexibility. This only adds to that.
For sure.
Just yesterday, I believe Gallinari injured his knee overseas. We're still not confirmed on the.
They reported it today. Torn meniscus.
Torn meniscus. Okay.
Yeah. Did y'all see the picture? Hold on. Sorry, Grant. Did you see the picture?
No.
Oh, it's bad. Ooh.
That's not great.
It is not good. Not good. Yeah. Anyway, continue. Sorry.
Okay. That was the more minor of the two moves, anyways. And maybe maybe he could be back in time for end of the season with a meniscus. Those aren't as serious nowadays. But like again, obviously a lot of health risks are tied to those guys, but I think ultimately, considering what they gave up for them and the salaries that Gallinari is at, pretty low risk moves. And if they do end up working out, they'll be, I think, more than just kind of the typical marginal additions that we see from finals teams. So really impressive there. And although the field is deeper, most of that is concentrated in the West, and that's between the Clippers, the Nuggets, the Timberwolves, potentially the Mavs, and potentially the Lakers as well. In the East, really, it's just the Bucks getting Middleton back and the Nets deciding to stay together. We'll see how that works out. But ultimately, there's been no big moves, like big talent shifts that shifted the balance of power. So the Celtics, like I think, ultimately kind of end up in a good position from that. So I'd love to hear what y'all have to say, too.
Yeah, they were my first winner. So, I mean, that's also biased, but I just agree. I thought they had a really good offseason. Unusual that team makes the finals and then gets better that offseason. So, yeah, I feel pretty good about it. And just like what you're saying, not much happened in the East from other contenders, except for just people hoping that people are going to return healthy or just improve on how they played last year. So, yeah, Celtics are a big winner for the East.
Yeah, you know, I echoed everything y'all said, and I also looked at it in the lens of they didn't make that big flashy trade for Kevin Durant. They kept their core. I'm just going to quote something to y'all from an article that I wrote about all the KD stuff. Boston just made the NBA Finals, and yes, one could argue the Bucks with a healthy Chris Middleton would have beaten Boston, but to reiterate, Boston just made the NBA Finals. And then factoring in Kevin Durant's age, 33 years old, compared to Brown's 25 years old and how a swap would shrink Boston's championship contending window significantly makes me hesitant to love a KD trade there. But I see both sides of the coin. If a KD and Brown trade happened, Boston immediately becomes the favorite in the East and perhaps the favorite to win it all. Though if that trade doesn't happen, Boston gets to run it back with the same roster that just made the finals. And I don't know, you'll probably saw reports that Brooklyn wanted Marcus Smart in that deal for Kevin Durant, and I think that would have been just too rich for my blood, and Boston made the right decision, if those reports are even true, to not include Marcus Smart in that deal for KD and to keep their core together while obviously adding Malcolm Brogdon, as you mentioned, Grant. Like, I don't see why Boston would try and sacrifice all the chemistry that they've already built making the NBA Finals by adding in Kevin Durant. And they didn't. They kept their core together, and I think they're a winner just because of that, by not breaking up what they already had. You know, I was on this podcast talking mad crap about the Boston Celtics. So much crap. And they turned it around. They found their groove. They found a legitimate chemistry in the way to have Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown play together and coexist together. And they shouldn't sacrifice that. They keep their massive championship window super wide open. It's such a big window for them to win a title, and they keep that intact, and I just think for that alone they're a winner. Like, that they're going to be really good for another 5 years, if as long as things stay the way they are. They're going to be very good for a very long time.
Yep, I don't think much disagreement from anybody here on that.
Yeah, all right, so good start. Something positive about the Boston Celtics. Let's now turn to something more negative. And Connor, not saying you're a negative person, but I'll have you give a loser of the NBA offseason.
Okay. This is another just personal one for me. Is that a bug, or was that you
waving away bad juju? I wasn't sure.
Oh, no, I saw something fly by. Okay.
You just did yoga, so I thought maybe you're just in that mindset.
Yeah. Big Zen guy these days.
Yeah, for real. Phil Jackson over here. Jeez.
My first loser is the Wizards. That's just a personal one.
I knew you'd agree with me on this too.
I just thought they had a I think every Wizard, I don't think any Wizards fan is happy with how this offseason has gone. For one thing, nobody who's a true Wizards fan really wanted Bradley Beal to re-sign that contract. He's just making so much money to be like the 30th, 20-something best player in the NBA. So that's going to make it tough for us to compete. And then also, we had a trade for Will, but we acquired Will Barton and Monte Morris for KCP, Ish Smith, and multiple TPEs, which is just one of those deals that's like, what does that do for us? Like, what does that possibly do for us right now? So that doesn't move the needle for us. Johnny Davis was our draft pick, which fine, but I just wasn't that high on Johnny Davis coming out of the draft. So maybe he'll prove me wrong, but I just wasn't feeling great about that. And then what else did we do this offseason? Like, our big offseason signing was Taj Gibson, who I didn't even know was in the NBA anymore. So it was not a great offseason for the Wizards.
I really thought Tibbs was the only one that wanted to employ Taj Gibson at this point.
Absolutely. So we just stayed the exact same as what we have been, and it's not looking great.
Yeah, you hit on basically everything I'm going to hit on, but I'm going to still go through my perspective on it. So Beal became like basically untradeable the moment he signed that contract, and the Wizards lost a lot of flexibility, ability to improve the team around him, and the team needs a lot of improvement. It's pretty abundantly clear that he should have been traded 2 years ago, but I think the Wizards and Beal are kind of like a couple who just is blind to the fact that they're terrible for each other and just are sticking with it because they just have no idea.
Well, it's good for Beal because Beal gets a ton of money.
Beal gets a ton of money, but he's still could have got a lot of money and gone in one somewhere. I mean, good to him. Good for him for getting the as much money as he could.
You can't really be a loser if you're making all that money.
Yeah, that's fair.
So
now they're handcuffed to a roster that finished 12th in the East last year and honestly has no exciting young players that could like change their fortunes. You mentioned Johnny Davis. I think that's like the most Wizards pick ever. Is it that they only draft boring players, or is it that like every player they draft they turn into a boring player? Because I just feel like all the young guys they have just aren't exciting. I was never sold on Davis as a top 10 pick. He's basically like,
what about Denny?
I mean, Denny's fine, but he averaged like 9 points a game. Like these guys are fine.
They're cool.
Davis is basically like a four inch shorter Rui, where like he's a good college player, but like I have no idea what his bankable NBA skill will be. He looked awful in summer league, and I don't think he will ever be good enough to justify the usage that his style of play requires in order to be maximized, right? And he also just doesn't fit with Brad Beal. Like no matter how much people like talk about how he can play point guard and Beal can be the shooting guard, or he can be shooting guard and Beal can be small forward, like they're both shooting guards, like full stop, both shooting guards. And ironically, he could have like been best served as a Beal replacement, but now there's no path to that happening. Yeah. So not great for the Wizards.
I agree.
did you have the Wizards listed, Francis, on anything, or did you just keep them out?
I just forgot about them, honestly. Yeah.
That's kind of the offseason they had, which is bad.
I just kind of forgot that they even made those moves, quite frankly. I'm fully with you on that. So I'm sorry, Connor, being a Wizards fan.
Next offseason, right? We always got next offseason.
Yeah. Legitimate question for you, because I'm just curious. Connor, how long till you think the Wizards will be a contender in the East again? How many years do you give them? Like, I'm actually really curious.
How long before they're a contender again? Contenders and like a legit, they can win the championship, or contenders that they can make the Eastern Conference Finals?
Yeah, how about Eastern Conference Final? Let's make the Eastern Conference Final.
Let's say 5 years from now, maybe they blow it up in a couple of years somehow, and they get a couple of picks. Let's say 5 years, we got a chance. But I don't see anything within 5 years.
Yeah, so
I feel like that's generous even. Like, I feel like
that's the
natural life cycle of an NBA team is at least like 7-8 years, and then like the Wizards are not going to be like the average. They're going to be worse than that natural life cycle. So
they've been worse than that for a long time. That's tough.
We had a couple of Wall, Bradley Beal years that were pretty fun, but that's the last thing. And then we had a couple of Gilbert years that were fun. Gilbert, Antoine, Caron years that were fun. And it's all that. We have to be one of the most futile American sports franchises of the last 40 years.
It's very rough.
Yeah.
Gosh, I'm sorry, man. I'm sorry, Connor.
It's really okay. My Orioles are making a push for the playoffs right now for baseball, so I'm good.
That's true. That's true. At least you have that. There you go. Glass half full. Francis, all right, so let's go.
Move us on to something more positive with a winner.
Yeah, I'll do a winner. And I'm curious. Maybe y'all will disagree with me on this, but a winner for me is Minnesota. I think trading for Rudy Gobert, and yes, did they give a crap ton for Rudy Gobert? Absolutely. They traded so much stuff for Rudy Gobert. But did it make the Wolves better? I think the answer is a hard yes. I think they're definitely a better team. Now, I'm not saying the Wolves will win the NBA title or even they're going to win the West, but I do think they'll finish fourth in the West and have a legit chance to make it out the conference because I really like the basketball fit of Gobert and Cat. Gobert makes up for the defensive deficiencies of Karl Anthony Towns. And offensively, the Wolves can run some really fun sets with Ant Gobert picking rolls with Gobert rim running and Cat on the perimeter spacing the floor or even in the dunker spot with two other shooters on the outside. A starting five of Gobert, Cat, Jaden McDaniels, Ant and D'Lo is super intriguing, especially if Jaden McDaniels takes an offensive leap. If he can become a more consistent three-point shooter, he's already a phenomenal defender, as we all know. That's a really fun starting five. And the depth is okay. Kyle Anderson, Jordan McLaughlin, Bryn Forbes, maybe Memphis's Josh Minot makes an impact on the Wolves. Naz Reid is a decent backup big. Cal probably starts to begin the season. He probably is in the starting five over Jaden McDaniels. So Jaden comes off the bench and he would boost the bench up just himself with his defense. I mean, to me, this is a really good basketball team. Again, I'm not saying they're going to win the West. I'm not saying they're winning the NBA title, but they're definitely better, and they're definitely really interesting. Yes, Danny Ainge took advantage of a desperate Timberwolves who needed a guy to cover Cat and needed a guy, Rudy Gobert, to be on the roster. So Danny Ainge took advantage of that and got a massive, massive haul for Rudy Gobert. But at the same time, Minnesota's a lot better. Like, I don't think this is the Vucevic trade to the Bulls. I think this is actually much better than that. Gobert is actually is an incredible defender, as we all know. And he helps out on the offensive side because Cat can just roam the perimeter. So, you know, I think Minnesota is a legit winner of the offseason. And we'll definitely talk about them more when we do our 15 most interesting teams preview. But I think they're a winner. What do y'all think?
I would have expected this take from Connor. I'm a little surprised. Francis.
Okay.
I don't disagree with basically anything you said, but it's basically for all the reasons you mentioned that I have them as a loser.
Okay.
And then on the other side, I have Danny Ainge as a winner. So it's like kind of the counterbalance to that. They are probably the most improved team that wasn't dealing with major injuries last year. Gobert overall, solid fit and probably launches them into, like you said, like 50 win territory and probably top four seed in the West contention. But with how deep the field is, especially in the West, that improvement I don't think is really even close enough to justify the greatest overpay in history. So what they gave up was...
I disagree with that. Okay,
wait, you can give your point after, but wait. they gave up three solid rotation, two starter level players, and essentially what boils down to six first rounders and a first round swap. All that for a player who, and I'm going to quote Zach Lowe here. I don't think we've ever actually quoted him as much as we talk about him. I don't think we've ever actually quoted him. But I'm going to quote him here because he summed it up better than I could.
Hi, Zach.
He said, a player whose usage rate in the playoffs is typically about 13%, who has not been able to hurt Reggie Jackson posting up in the playoffs when they switch on to him, and who is owed $47 million in 2026. Let me add on to that a little bit. Gobert is already 30. His defense is less impactful in the playoffs, although I think that's a little bit overblown, but it still is statistically less impactful. He's probably not a top 15 level player, even in the regular season. He's consistently made third in team All-NBA. That's really only because there's a specific slot for his position, and there's not a lot of competition of stars at that position. All that is not to say that I don't think Rudy Gobert is very good. He is. It's just that he's nowhere near worth what is possibly the second biggest trade package ever behind the AD package. Do we think it's the second biggest one? especially when he plays the same position as Cat. And even though I think that fit will be fine, and I think what the points you made about that, Francis, were all true, I still think at the best this is like an imperfect fit for that level of investment they gave up. I still think you have Cat playing probably a little too much four, and stressing defensively a little bit more than you'd like. There was also a lot of talk about DeJounte Murray to the Wolves and Gobert to the Hawks, which I think would have made a lot more sense for both of those teams than the vice versa that actually happened. And then moving on to Danny Ainge real quick, the funniest part of this trade to me is that the Wolves have repeatedly harped on the fact that they didn't give up Jaden McDaniels, just because that makes it so clear to me how this negotiation went down and and how much Danny Ainge like melted the minds of the Wolves front office. So the way I see it, Ainge first asked for Anthony Edwards, and the Wolves said, obviously, no, we're not doing that. Then he asked for Kat, and the Wolves said, nope, not doing that. So then he said, okay, well, let's recreate a similar value out of your other pieces, your non-Kat and Ant pieces. And already at that point, he has reframed the Wolves' thinking into Rudy Gobert's value is about the same as Ant and Kat's. We just don't want to give up those guys. So if we can walk out of this with all three of those players, we're the winners, right?
Yeah.
So then the package Dan Ainge asks for is something like McDaniels, Beverly, Vanderbilt, Beasley, Bulmaro, two first-rounders and a swap or something like that. And the Wolves, but the Wolves really wanted to keep McDaniels, so they push back and they go back and forth about that until Ainge says, okay, fine, then we'll need something else to make up that value. Give us like Walker Kessler and two more first-rounders. And the Wolves, at this point, have worked themselves into such a frenzy about McDaniels and are so excited to keep him that they think that's fair value for him. And they're not even focused or thinking on how ridiculous the trade package as a whole for Gobert has gotten at this point.
Yeah.
So I think that honestly gives us some incredible insight and really interesting insight into how Ainge has been able to win all these trades over the year. It's because like these are the type of mental gymnastics he's doing with other teams.
For sure.
So,
for sure.
Connor, you can counter and say how much you love Gobert and think he's 100% a top 10 player. So that's ridiculous. You can say that.
Which I'm not saying that, but I just don't think they actually gave up that much in sense of the things of like, there's the potential that they turned into like they gave up nothing really. Malik Beasley, Patrick Beverly, two role players. I like Beverly, but like you take Gobert for Beverly in a package of role players every time. And then it's a 2023 first rounder, so that's not going to be a good pick. 2025 shouldn't be a good pick. A 2026 swap, if that even means that the Jazz would be better than the Wolves, which I don't think would happen probably. So that part won't even happen. 2027 first round pick, okay, fine. Like it's 5 years from now, 4 years from now. So that might be bad for Minnesota. Well, they could Minnesota could still be good. So it'd be another one in the 20s. So it doesn't actually really mean anything. And then the 2029 pick is conditional. So I actually didn't think that. I think there's a good chance that this doesn't even turn into that much. Maybe the Wolves do blow it up and have to blow it up, and those picks become valuable in 2026, 2027. But I just think there's a chance that like the Wolves can stay good here, and it doesn't add up to that much. And then the real reason why I like this for the Wolves so much is that Wolves have just been such an unaccomplished franchise for so long that the fact that they're actually making trades for stars to try to win right now is just so exciting. I only know two Timberwolves fans, but just the fact that they're excited to actually have a basketball season is a big thing. So I feel like that has to be put into consideration. You know, if this was the Lakers or Celtics, you look at this trade and be like, what is this? But if you're a place like Minnesota that doesn't get free agents, you know, I think you take this swing. So I like it.
Go ahead, Grant. Go ahead.
Okay.
Oh, also they got Kyle Anderson. So, you know, you guys have to like that.
Sure. Solid fit. I don't disagree that like this was like a good move for them to make. And I don't disagree that those picks like aren't like the most valuable picks, but I think that's always the case in this type of trade is like you're sending a really good player to another team and that team's probably going to be good. So like when you're comparing this to the package for AD or the package for Drew Holiday or something, Gobert just wasn't worth like this amount of picks, even though they're not that good. It was still just too many picks. So if it had been, you know, three picks in a swap, I would have been, and these players, I would have been totally fine with it. But I guess it is like four picks, but then it's the first like two, they're past two first rounders, so it's basically six picks.
Right.
Yeah.
So it just is still too much to me. But no, I do agree that like they needed to make a swing, and I don't hate this swing. I would have liked the DeJounte Murray swing more though, and I think that would have cost them a lot less. So.
Yeah, it's this, like I mentioned Vucevic before, because this is akin to the conversation we had when the Bulls made that trade for Vucevic. And Grant, you took the more negative position on that trade. I took the more positive side of it. And the reason being is part of what Connor said, which is why I love the fact we have a podcast. But because, like, Connor just shared the position that I held before with Vucevic, saying the Bulls have been so bad for so long, and they finally made a move to try and win now and improve their team. Is it going to make them an Eastern Conference title contender? Probably not. But they're much better, and they were really good last year before the injuries to Lonzo Ball, Alex Caruso, all that happened. Those are two biggest injuries for the Bulls, but they were really good before that. And the Wolves, I think, next season are going to be really good. I mean, like you said, Grant, you even think that they'll be a 50-win team, which is really good. That's probably a 4 seed in the Western Conference. And they're going to get home court. They're going to have an energized fan base. And the team that hasn't, a fan base that hasn't anything to root for so long, finally does. And who knows? Like, the Mavs made it to the Western Conference Final, and they were the 5th seed in the West, if I'm not mistaken. So who knows what happens? Maybe the Timberwolves make the Western Conference Final. Who knows? Because injuries and et cetera. They're now really good. They have their hat in the ring. They have their hat in the contender ring in the West. And who knows what happens from there on out. So at least they made the move. And I think it's that alone, for me, makes them a winner for the offseason. So any other thoughts on the Wolves? And again, we're going to talk about them again in the future, so we don't have to spend all our time here.
Yeah, I think there's value in, like, providing that for your fan base. I do. But I do think it's kind of a fallacy in your thinking that, like, we've been bad for so long that we should just be good for now, when, like, those kind of win now short-sighted moves are probably what have been making you bad for so long this entire time anyways. So this is going to make them, like, good but probably not elite in the short term, and then probably going to handicap them, you know, when Gobert's got huge money on the books at 34. It's going to handicap them in the long term.
They could make a run to the finals if, like, I mean, look at the NBA postseason last year. It's pretty much which team was injured or not made a run. Yeah,
sure,
so
like it can happen.
That happens, like, again, and Timberwolves happen to be the healthy team.
They're not. I don't yet. Yeah. They're, and like I said, they're gonna be, like, I think they're gonna be in the 50-win territory, but I do think they're gonna be a worse playoff team than a regular season team at the same time, because that's just historically the case with Gobert. But yeah, I mean, they put themselves in a position to be like a puncher's chance. But I just think to make this type of move, it should have been better positioned than that.
Yeah, fair enough. Okay, so let's move on to a loser. I'll go. So Grant, you gave a winner last time. Connor gave a loser. So I'll have Grant, you give a loser for the NBA offseason.
Okay. I'll go small loser. Kind of related to that last one. Superstar trade requests. Is a loser.
Ooh, I like it. Okay.
First of all, it's gonna be a pretty quick one. But first of all, the Nets standing their ground, that could potentially inspire other teams to do the same. Stay strong, not trade their guys, especially when they have more than a year or two on their contracts left in the coming years. Hopefully, we'll see maybe some more pushback from teams on that. And then also, I think the Gobert trade kind of completely recalibrated the market. And that makes it nearly impossible, at least in the short run, to put together a trade for a true superstar, because what is KD's value if Gobert's value is 7 picks or whatever?
Of course. Yeah. Yeah, I think that's a very fair point. I mean, it's been well talked about, well documented, how Gobert's trade just ruined KD's trade value. It just made things almost unachievable for any team looking to trade Rudy Gobert. So I think that's a very fair point. Connor, anything else?
No.
Okay. Fair enough. All right, Connor, then you give a winner. You give a winner, then I'll give a loser.
Okay. Winner. I'm trying to debating between two of them. I'll go with. I'll just say I'll just flip the other side of it. I'll give the Jazz the winners of the offseason too, just for that Gobert trade, and then also for the ensuing Donovan Mitchell domino, which hasn't actually happened yet, but I'm just kind of, you know, expecting it to happen in the next few months anyway. And even if it happens midseason, I'm counting that as part of this. So, what's Danny Ainge's nickname? He's got a nickname, doesn't he? Dealing Danny? No, it's not that.
That sounds something. Hold on. That sounds right.
Is it dealer?
Let me see.
Dealer Danny. Is it Dealer Danny?
Is it Dealer Danny?
I feel like it's Dealer Danny.
Yeah,
Trader
okay.
Danny?
That makes sense.
Trader Danny.
Okay. Well, either way, any of these.
Should have gone.
Just the.
Should have gone with the alliteration.
Just how.
For sure.
How quickly. Yeah, yeah. How quickly the Jazz have been able to kind of reboot this, and I'm curious to see how much Danny Ainge. Okay, part of the reason that I'm waiting for the offseason is just the excitement I have to see how badly Danny Ainge swindles the Knicks, which is really what I'm looking forward to. While I'm giving the Jazz a win for the offseason, because whatever it's going to be bad for the Knicks.
This is Danny Ainge's like wheelhouse. This is like his dream. I think that's probably why big reason why he joined the Jazz is he could sense them like getting ready to tear down. He's like, oh yeah, that's where I make my money, baby.
Let's do it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. He was getting really excited for this.
Yeah, so I'm giving the Jazz a win to be able to see my Knicks fan friends react to whatever happens to them.
I'll give a loser then. I'm going to go with the Phoenix Suns as a loser of the offseason, mainly because they made it such a big deal that they weren't going to pay DeAndre Ayton the max contract. They went out publicly, stated this in October at the beginning of the NBA season, held firm on their stance, and then what happened? They paid DeAndre Ayton the max contract. So they did exactly what they said they wouldn't do. Now it's like, do you believe that DeAndre Ayton deserved the max contract? Okay, maybe. Would you pay $33.25 million a year for 4 years to a guy who averages 16 and 10 and averaged 16 and 8 and only played 26 minutes a game in the Mavs series where your team chokes a 3-2 lead and loses by 33 on your home court in Game 7. I mean, I don't know if you pay that dude a max deal. But on the flip side, like, I get it. His value is to the team is much bigger than his per-game averages. He has a good win share, per 48, and actually helps the Suns win games. But by paying him the max, that also took Phoenix out of the race for Kevin Durant and forced the Suns to go back on its word and pay Ayton the max. So that alone makes, for me, has them a loser just by doing exactly the opposite of what they said they wouldn't do. Kind of because Ayton, who I think is a winner of offseason because he got his max money, because Ayton decided not to play ball with the Suns in their pursuit of Kevin Durant and saying that, oh yeah, we can sign and trade me, you can get Kevin Durant. Instead, Ayton was like, no, I'm going to go sign where I'm valued and force your hand. You're either going to pay me max money or I'm out of here. Like, I'm not going to play ball with you and be a part of your trade package for KD when you've made it clear how low you value me at the beginning of the season. And if I were Ayton, I would have done the same thing. So big kudos to him for standing his ground and getting his max money and staying on a championship contending team. Because if he got signed by the Pacers, yeah, he would have gotten max money, but he also would be playing for the Pacers. But now instead, he's getting max money and playing for the Suns, who still is a contender in the Western Conference. I'm kind of low on the Suns, but you know, we'll talk about that at another time. But they're still a contender in the Western Conference. So, and for him, it's a big win-win. For Phoenix, it's a loss because they didn't get KD, and then they recounted on what they said they wouldn't do. So for me, they're a loser. What do y'all think?
Yeah, they were a contender that needed to improve based on how the rest of the NBA was going to be better this upcoming year. Yeah. And they didn't, so I agree. That. Did we ever find out what it was going to take for the Nets to accept the Suns' offer? Do we hear what offer they were demanding? Do we ever find that out or no?
I don't think so. I think it was just always assumed that Ayton had to be part of that deal. Like some combo of Ayton, Cam Johnson, picks, Jay Crowder. That's my guess. Maybe I'm sure Nets would ask for Mikal Bridges, but I'm sure the Suns would just hang up the phone if that happened in that deal. But as soon as Ayton got signed, the Suns couldn't trade Ayton, obviously. And so it was stuck with Mikal Bridges, Cam Johnson, and Jay Crowder in picks. That's basically their package. And, you know, we love Mikal Bridges, but that's not going to get done for KD. So,
yeah,
that was it.
Okay.
I went back and forth on, like, whether they were winners or losers because I think they ultimately ended up doing the right thing in re-signing DeAndre Ayton. Because if they don't, their contention window – their contention window was closed if they don't do that, if they just, like, let him walk or whatever.
For sure.
But, like, why did they have to spend all this time wrecking their relationship with him in order to reach this point? So it was a very, very classic Suns move of, like, making very stupid decisions, and then ultimately, like, they work out for them. I feel like that's been their history the past few years. But, yeah, then they don't – they don't get KD, but they do have the possibility of getting KD down the road. Does this extension mean that Ben Simmons would have to be moved elsewhere because they're now now both on rookie extensions if DeAndre Ayton was in the deal? It complicates things.
That's a good point.
But I think the point you made, Connor, that they didn't really make a big move. I think they remained solidly in contention level, but they're no longer like one of the top 2-3 favorites at least. So overall, probably a slight loser of the season, off season.
Yeah. All right. Let's do one more round for winners and losers, then we'll close out the pod. Nothing too long for y'all in our first episode back. So Grant, I'll give you the floor. You can do a winner, loser, whatever you want, but floor is yours.
Okay, I've got one more left, and it's a winner. And I had the Pelicans. So coming off a very impressive end to the season last year, they get Zion back, hopefully healthy, and sign him to an extension that does have the much-needed injury protections built into it. So very solid move there. Like, you had to give him the contract, but you had to make sure that there were some protections as well. And then they just kind of stayed solid on a really talented deep team, didn't pull any like win now moves yet. Kind of want to see how these things work out because it is a very talented team. But if things don't gel as easily with Zion on the lineup, they do have a lot of flexibility to shake things up. They can move Brandon Ingram. They could move Jonas Valanciunas. And that could ultimately enter them very easily into the KD race if that surfaces again. And I think they'd be a great team for KD to fit on.
Yeah, I agree. I think I actually have them as a winner too, because of what you said. They kept the core intact. They didn't go all in for KD. They kept Zion. They kept Ingram. They re-upped Zion with those protections, like you mentioned. They're going to be good. You know, as Grizzlies fans,
What sort of win total are you expecting for them?
46. I don't know.
Yeah, I was going to say 44, 46, probably. Okay. Like between 40 to 46. That's probably the wide range. But yeah.
But I mean, enough talent where if things gel.
I mean, 40 would be a losing record.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah. But they'd probably be a playing team with that record in the West, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Enough talent where if things like gel well and Zion is really looking good, then like they could compete for a top four spot too, I feel like. I mean, there's just so many teams in the West, though, so it's so hard. Like, there's going to be really good teams who are like seventh seed. The seventh seed's going to be like really good. It's just a lot of good Western teams.
It's going to be brutal. When we get into our preseason predictions, it's going to be the Western Conference is going to be brutal. It always is. I feel like we say this every single year that the Western Conference is a bloodbath, but it's really going to be a bloodbath next season. All right, Connor, go ahead.
I'm debating between talking about the Lakers or the Hawks, and I guess I'll say the Hawks. I'm going to say the Hawks as winners for this offseason. I love the Murray trade. I know the Hawks gave up 3 first-rounders for it, but just this is kind of what the Hawks are saying. Okay, we've done the whole we care only about offense thing, and now let's actually get some defense on this team and see if Trey can become what Trey's like in a postseason environment with that situation around him. So I like that. I like the AJ Griffin draft pick who slid, but people are saying that he has some health concerns. Is that the idea of why he slid?
I think he tore his ACL like maybe twice in high school or something. He sat out his whole senior year. So like has had injuries before college.
Yeah. But as a guy who's coming, who draft profile is a lockdown defender who can make a very high percentage of threes, having that and Murray kind of on both sides of Trae Young at all times should be pretty helpful. So, I'm just excited to see the Hawks this year and see what it looks like when they have a defensive guard with them. I don't have them as like a top contender. I still have the Bucks and Celtics obviously ahead of them, but they got a little bit more interesting to me, so I have them as a winner.
Okay. I like the Hawks too. Again, we'll probably talk about them when we do our preseason breakdown, but I'm always a Hawks guy, and I like the Murray trade as well. What do you think, Grant?
Love the AJ Griffin pick. Thought that was great. I like DeJounte Murray a lot. I'm a little less sold on this fit in particular, just because I think DeJounte Murray at his maximum level, like, is the lead playmaker, and he's not going to be quite that. And I'm not convinced Trae Young is going to want to play off ball, even though it would be great to see him play off ball.
He seems like a natural off ball player.
It would be, I think he would, but he's not. He just hasn't done it, and like hasn't shown any signs of like really wanting to do it.
So I think
they'll be good. I just don't know that you'll be able to maximize either player necessarily, just because of their overlapping skill sets in playmaking, which is never a bad thing to have too many playmakers. But I think these are both like lead playmakers. But it was good value for Jonte Murray, and I don't like hate it or anything. So I'm excited to see and be proven wrong about that.
Okay.
Yeah. Fair enough. all right. I'll close it out, and I'll give a. I'll give a winner. Let's also just close positive. I'm just gonna say
if you're close on a winner, Connor, I want to hear your Lakers take as well. Was that a winner or a loser?
No, they were a loser. Although I like them getting Pat Bev, but
okay,
they were still losers for me. Just the fact that pretty much nothing happened even outside of Pat Bev.
And there's so much drama around the Lakers. I don't think anyone could view them as a winner in the offseason. There's so much drama around this damn team.
They will be a winner for me, like because people keep talking about the Buddy Hield Miles Turner trade, and I didn't think they had enough for that, even if like Talen Horton-Tucker was included. I didn't think like their two first rounders plus Talen Horton-Tucker and Russell Westbrook was enough to get Buddy Hield and Miles Turner. But people are still have been talking about it so much, like it's actually like something they're talking about, just like the two first rounders and Russell Westbrook for those two guys. So if that happens, they will be a winner of the offseason for me for sure.
What? How long has that been around?
A couple months at least. I mean, for as long as, I don't know, the whole Russell Westbrook drama has been going on.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, that happens. That changes things. But
yeah, for sure.
I mean, who knows? So
Kendrick Perkins has Russell Westbrook and Beverly being the top defensive duo in basketball this year. So who knows?
Isn't your job to watch basketball?
Perk is so interesting. Sometimes I really like him, and then sometimes, like, Perk, what's going on right now? Like, why? Like,
yeah.
What's happening?
What corner of Twitter is he living in that still thinks Russ is, like, a good defender?
It's very confusing.
Because he doesn't seem like a guy who's making takes just to get attention. It seems like when he says that, he really does believe it.
It's not a
Stephen A. thing, so it is particularly confusing.
Yeah, it's very, I don't know. I don't understand Perk, but not a lot of people do, so that's okay. All right,
carry on.
Thank you. So I'll do a winner, and then we'll just close this episode, and it'll be a three-team winner. So the Memphis Grizzlies, Toronto Raptors, and the Pelicans, the aforementioned New Orleans Pelicans, are winners to me because they didn't go all in for Kevin Durant trades. They stood their ground. They held firm. They didn't just give in to the allure of trading for Kevin Durant. And they kept their young pieces. Memphis didn't trade Jaren Jackson and Desmond Bain for Kevin Durant. They kept those pieces and kept their window of contention and also championship contention further down the line as they progress as basketball players. They kept that open. As awesome as it would have been to see Kevin Durant in a Memphis Grizzlies uniform, to give up Jaren Jackson and Desmond Bane for that, just that it would have been way too much, and all of Memphis would not have been happy. Like, it would have been great to have KD, but I don't think any Grizzlies fan would have been happy about that. And they didn't, so that's a win for me. Toronto, similar concept. They didn't trade Scottie Barnes, who is just Rookie of the Year, who's a fantastic young player. He's Toronto's current and future, present and future for Toronto, and their hopes of staying a contender, and in hopes of in the future coming back to that championship level that they were at just a few years ago. And I saw a fun report about Scottie Barnes that he gives hugs to, I think, like every Raptors staff or player, like during when they practice or something like that. Like, he's a hugger. And I tweeted, no wonder they didn't trade Scottie Barnes for Kevin Durant. I don't think Kevin Durant's a hugger. Like, I don't think Kevin Durant's that type of guy. So no
He'd
wonder.
Be a hard guy to hug. His arms are too, it just seems like it would feel weird.
I feel like it'd be a really bony hug too, because he's still a pretty strong dude.
That's why he's so shut off, is because people don't want to hug him.
He's
dealing with hug trauma.
Exactly. Hey, if you're in Kevin Durant's inner circle listening to this podcast, maybe go give him a hug. Like, maybe he just needs a hug. You know, I'm a hugger. I love hugs, but you know, maybe he doesn't want it. Who knows? Anyway, Toronto made the right decision to not trade Scottie Barnes and sacrifice even like more assets for KD. And if Toronto did, what does that do for Toronto? They're not that KD on Toronto doesn't push them into championship contention. They just don't have the pieces, especially if considering the assets they'd have to give up for Kevin Durant. So kudos to Toronto for not doing that. Pelicans, same thing. They didn't trade Zion. They extended him, gave him the necessary precautions in his contract in the extension. Didn't trade Ingram. Like they stayed pat. They held firm. They didn't give in to the attraction of getting Kevin Durant on the team. And so I think, to me, those are winners because they did the right thing. They didn't make boneheaded moves to get that superstar, and they kept what they have. And, you know, this isn't the Timberwolves where they needed to make – they were desperate to make this move, so they made it. The Grizzlies, not desperate. Why would as Grizzlies fans, why would we be desperate? That doesn't make sense. Boston, why would Boston be desperate? They just made the NBA Finals. New Orleans, they have a young core. Why would they be desperate? So they made the right decisions, and I think just for that, they're winners of the offseason. What do y'all think?
On a smaller point on two of those teams, Trey Murphy looked better than Zaire Williams in summer league. So winner Pelicans, loser Grizzlies there.
Chris never going to get over this. Zaire Williams could become Paul George, and he'll just be like, but
I would love for Zaire Williams. Remember, that was my guy originally, and then like Trey Murphy like, late in the process like kind of passed him for me, and I was like,
I remember.
And then I was like, we could have stayed where we were and gotten Trey Murphy instead of Zaire Williams. But I was very hopeful Zaire was going to look great in summer league, and he had his moments, but Trey Murphy looked better.
His moments.
You guys are still of the opinion that whole Zaire Williams pick was really supposed to be for Giddey, and they weren't expecting someone else to take Giddey. Is that still your stance on it?
I think I thought that. Francis did not think that. Francis thought Zaire Williams was his guy.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I thought that was their guy. Maybe Giddey was their guy, but I mean, who the hell knows? But yeah, Grant had that opinion. Yeah.
All right, so I'll ask this. Like what you said, Francis, do either of you, before we close this out, you're optimistic on a certain player or a team this year? So we already said that Grant was like, oh, I'm not exactly sure about the fit earlier, but you know, I hope I'm wrong. So it was more like something that was a little pessimistic that, but he's hope he's wrong about. Is there anything you're optimistic about and you hope you're wrong, that you hope it actually is worse than what you're thinking?
Okay, so something that I am optimistic about, but
yeah,
I
as
actually...
in like you think this they're gonna do well, but you hope you're wrong.
This is a very specific question that you're putting us on the spot for, but we can cut out the dead space of us thinking.
Yeah.
Something.
Maybe like maybe something related to someone, a team the Grizzlies don't like or something, but you think that team's actually going to be good or something like that?
I mean, yeah, I hope that the Gobert fit doesn't work out because I think the Timberwolves are better than the Grizzlies. I believe that. And Grizzlies fans don't feel that way. I've talked to people on Twitter about this, and they don't think the Wolves are better than the Grizzlies. I do think they're better than Memphis right now. And the biggest reason is Memphis won't have Jaren Jackson Jr. until January, like late December or January. So I think there's a high chance, this is spoiling my Grizzlies take when we talk about him later on, but there's a high chance that I think they finish sixth in the West. Like, that's very possible.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think that is an absurd opinion. And Grizzlies fans will just have to hopefully be patient and not be irrational about this. And it's not a knock on the Grizzlies. They're really good. They just won't have Jaren Jackson for the first third of the season. And John Morant's fantastic. Obviously, Bane's great. But I think there's a chance they finish sixth. And the West is so good. It's such a good conference. But with that said, I think the Grizzlies could finish sixth. But then they have a legit chance to make a Western Conference final because they're all healthy and they're clicking and they're grooving. So that's still possible because they're still really good. But yeah, I hope the Gobert fits bad because I think the Wolves are better. So that's my answer.
Yeah. Okay.
That's a really good one. Because I almost thought the Wolves were better than the Grizzlies last year in that playoff series just because they were like, they were a better suited team for the playoffs than us. And they were a really tough matchup for the Grizzlies specifically. They weren't a better team because they were so young and inexperienced, but I was like scared about what that team was going to be. With another year of development and experience and stuff, I was like, could they be better than the Grizzlies next year, even before the Gobert thing? Now is definitely possible. So yeah, that's a really good one for us.
Yeah. All right, Grant, do you have one? No? Yes? No? Possibly?
We'd have to sit here a long time for me to think of one.
Okay. Tune in next time to find out Grant's answer.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Maybe it would have to do with a team that we would discuss in a future episode, then you can provide your take then, if that's how it comes about. But anyway, all right, cool. Thanks, guys. The winners and losers of the NBA offseason. Like I said at the start, we're going to start our series, I guess. We do this before the NBA season. Talk about the 15 most interesting teams going into the NBA season. We'll have some guests come on, so that'll be awesome. Don't forget to subscribe to our podcast. Leave us 5 stars. Give us a review. Comment on the podcast. And to all the listeners, Grant, Connor, until next time, everybody. Peace. Pool days, hot tops, with my blue face, ice pops. I'ma make a shoelace, necklace. Yeah, we whipping pops on Lexus. And I'm skipping school days, mic drops. Eyes on summer like Cyclops. Yeah, we falling off the sidewalk. Mama wants a home.